Hi, we're the Denver Broncos cheerleaders, and you're listening to Sports Crunch with DeGrom.
This is Sports Crunch with DeCrom. I'm your host, David Cromelo, and I'm joined as always by my right-hand man, Hal Bent, of full press coverage. The National Football League truly is a week-to-week proposition. Headed into week six, we were discussing on this very program, the NFL hierarchy is essentially the 49ers and everyone else. But on Sunday, the 49ers suffered their first loss of the season, and many teams at the top, despite winning their games in most cases, had a lot of potentially fatal flaws exposed. And that just goes to show you that even though we know a lot about the league this year, there's still far more uncertainty and no clear slam dunk Super Bowl favorite with 12 weeks left in the regular season. What do you think, Cal?
I couldn't agree more, David. And we're seeing teams, you know, quarterbacks getting injured, key players injured. The injuries are having the effects on these teams already. And we're not even into the dog days of the schedule yet. We're not even halfway. We're still at the beginning. So there's a lot of football still to be played and a lot of teams that can still get hot and make a run, and leaders that we're looking at right now that should be a shoe-in that, well, may just not be.
Indeed, Hal. And before we proceed with our preview of week seven, what was your biggest takeaway from week six?
Hey, my biggest takeaway, I've got to go with that Detroit Lions defense. Credit to defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn and John Fox, who's the senior defensive assistant there. That is a physical, punishing unit. You know, just like on the offensive side of the football, where they can pound the ball when need be, those big, strong offensive line, the Lions are doing the same thing on that defensive side. Alex Anzalone just jumps off the screen week after week. He's becoming a defensive star. I'm loving it. I had so many questions, especially in that secondary with Emmanuel Mosby hurt again, CJ Gardner-Johnson out early in the season. And I doubted this defense, especially that secondary. And they are making me eat crow. They look fantastic. They look like a championship defense paired with a championship offense there in Detroit.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, Hal. The amazing job Aaron Glenn has done in dramatically improving that Detroit Lions defense is a story that cannot be ignored any longer. But speaking of defense, we also can't ignore the historically special start the Cleveland Browns are off to on defense, and they punctuated it with an amazing performance against that high-octane 49ers offense last week. And let's go inside the numbers for a bit. The Browns have only allowed 1,002 yards through five games so far this season. And that is the lowest number allowed since the Colts in 1971, when they gave up 836 yards in their first five games. And it is also the third fewest allowed in five games behind the Colts in 71 and the 1970 Vikings, who gave up 945 yards in their first five games. And also, the Browns, on average, are allowing opposing offenses 200 yards per game. And the next closest team, 260 yards per game. And that just goes to show you how special this Browns defense is and why Jim Schwartz deserves another shot at a head coaching job. And now let's hand out our weekly awards, starting with our all caps GOAT of the week. You go first here, Hal.
All right, my GOAT of the week, I'm giving it to Kyren Williams, the running back from the Rams. I'm going to do a little curveball here. Nobody's running for 100 yards last week. Only one other running back topped that. So Kyren Williams, second game, he topped 100 yards, rushed for 158 yards, but definitely needs to get that mention. Him and that Rams offensive line took over the game in the second half against Arizona. Unfortunately, ankle injury may slow him up in the coming weeks, yeah. But while he was on the field, he was making a big difference and is a big part of why those Rams are where they are now, a wild card kind of team heading into this season.
Absolutely. And my all caps go to the week. I just have to give it to Bengals defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo. The Seahawks totaled 381 yards of offense against the Bengals last Sunday and went into the red zone five times, yet could only muster 10 points in those five red zone possessions. And it's all because Lou Anarumo's guys won at every level of the field. The pass rush won its battles against that Seahawks offensive line. Those Bengals corners constantly got in the grills of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, not allowing them to make explosive plays, especially in that part of the field. And that was the reason why the Bengals are 3-3 headed into the bye week and back in the thick of the playoff race. And now on to our dunce of the week. I just have to give mine to Falcons quarterback Desmond Ridder. How can a team significantly outgained their opponent? The Falcons had more than 400 yards of total offense compared to the Commanders, which had less than 200 yards of total offense, and still lose. Here's how, and this sequence sums it up. Driving for the game-tying touchdown in a goal-to-goal situation on third and goal, Desmond Ridder carelessly commits a delay-of-game penalty. And on the very next play, he throws a boneheaded interception. He is the biggest reason why the Atlanta Falcons might not make the playoffs this year, and that's why he deserves our Dunce of the Week honors for week six. What about you, Hal?
I'm going to stick with the quarterbacks here with you, and I hate to do this because one of my favorite players, been in the league a while, but Tyrod Taylor filling in for the Giants 6 seconds before the halftime, no timeouts. Technically, you could almost squeeze in two shots at the end zone throwing the ball. He audibles to a run, Barkley stuffed, 0 points. And at the end of the game, when they're sitting there at the 1 yard line and couldn't get it in again, they could have kicked a field goal if they had those other 3 points there and changed that entire game. Points are precious. Nobody, especially this year, can afford to leave them on the field like Tyrod Taylor did with that terrible audible call.
You could definitely make the case there, Hal. At speed of quarterbacks, we talked about Brock Purdy as a 2023 MVP candidate on last week's show. While he still has to be considered the favorite at this time, despite that performance against that amazing Browns defense that I just alluded to, there may be another quarterback inching closer and closer behind him. Over his past 17 games, this particular quarterback has a 67.6 completion percentage, 4,473 passing yards, 29 touchdown passes, and just 4 interceptions. And his team's record in those games, 13-4. And that team is the Detroit Lions, and that quarterback is obviously Jared Goff. If Jared Goff keeps this level of production up for the rest of the season and the Lions end up winning, say, 11 or 12 games, does Jared Goff have a strong case for 2023 NFL MVP?
David, I'm going to say no, just because we talked about this with Brock Purdy last week, as you said, and we jinxed him. He had a horrible game. So no, I'm not doing that to Goff this week.
Why?
I refuse. No, seriously, I mean, come on. It's a top five offense there in Detroit. He's the quarterback. That puts him into the MVP conversation. And like you said, going back the past year, those numbers are MVP level. And let's look at it. You know, Josh Allen's thrown a lot more picks. Mahomes, that offense isn't clicking. Cincinnati, Burrow was supposed to be one of those MVP candidates. He got off to a slow start. So the opportunity is there. I mean, I would put, you know, I still have Tua at number one, but he's in the conversation. He's in that top three, no doubt about it right now. And like you said, if he keeps it going, definitely in that conversation.
I couldn't agree more. And staying on the quarterback train for a moment, these past 2 weeks, Russell Wilson has reverted back to the version of himself that we saw last season. Assuming this continues these next several weeks, the Broncos have absolutely no good options remaining with him. If Denver wants to part ways with Wilson after this season, the only way to do so would be to do a post-June 1st cut, which would leave an $85 million dead cap charge spread out over the next two seasons. However, the cost of keeping him is even more expensive. In addition to the $39 million he's set to make in 2024, no matter what, an additional $37 million becomes fully guaranteed if he's still on the roster on the fifth day of the 2024 league year. Thus, if he suffers a serious injury during the remaining months of the season and cannot pass a physical by mid-March, the Broncos are likely stuck with him for the next two seasons. Would you be surprised to see the Broncos permanently bench Russell Wilson by week 13, if not earlier, barring a dramatic improvement by him?
David, be no surprise at all. It would be expected. I would say as early as midseason, definitely by Thanksgiving. If this team is going nowhere where it looks like there's no chance of them getting back on track this year, $37 million is a huge amount to be guaranteeing for a quarterback that it seems like nobody wants there. Look, I don't think Jared Stidham's the answer there. The answer is crash for Caleb, no doubt about it.
Or dump for Drake.
Dump for Drake, either or. Get yourself into that position, one or two. And ride it out with Ben DiNucci. I don't care what they do there. But anything's better than guaranteeing that money for Russell Wilson. Get a young quarterback at the top of the draft, nice and cheap, and, eat that money. That's what you got to do in the NFL these days. So, yeah, no surprise at all. I think it's an expectation that I'd be shocked by Thanksgiving if Russell Wilson's still the starting quarterback in Denver.
I would as well. And now it's time to play our favorite game, Truth or Exaggeration. You know how this game works, Al. I make a statement and you let me know whether you think I'm telling the truth or whether you think I'm exaggerating, and then explain why. And we continue with the crash for Caleb, dump for Drake sweepstakes in Chicago, where Justin Fields suffered a dislocated right thumb during last week's loss to the Vikings. And David Chow, who you can follow on Twitter at Pro Football Doc, he is the former team doctor for the Chargers. He said that there's a real possibility Justin Fields could end up missing months and need surgery on his thumb. So truth or exaggeration? If Justin Fields' dislocated right thumb forces him to miss most of the remainder of the season, or if not all of it, you can lock the Bears into one of the top two picks in the 2024 NFL draft.
I don't know the way Carolina's playing. I think you could lock him in one of the two either way. But definitely without Fields. I mean, Fields is going to be pushing to get back because he certainly knows if the Bears are in that top one or two, he may not be the quarterback much longer. So he's going to be fighting to get back out on the field. But if he can't, if he just physically can't do it, that could end his time in Chicago, no doubt about it. So, yeah, definitely, if the Bears going with a
Tyson Bagent.
I my head kept saying bagel and I knew it was wrong. I'm horrible. I was like, no, I know the kid's name's not bagel. So I would say, the Tyson Bagent, not leading the Bears out of that pack, it's clumped up at the bottom for those first couple of picks. So yeah, definitely lock the Bears in without Fields. That's devastating to their season this year and basically would spell his doom if they're in those top two picks.
You said it, Hal. And for the second consecutive season, the winner of the NFC South will win 8 games or less. Truth or exaggeration?
I was going to say an exaggeration and say, nah, Tampa will be better than that. But then I looked at their schedule and I was like, you know what? No, they're not. San Francisco, Tennessee, Buffalo, Jacksonville, Houston, they're not winning these games. Like, not going to happen. No way. 7-10 is going to be plenty for whoever comes out of that terrible conference there, whether it be Tampa, New Orleans. I don't see how it could be Atlanta, and we can already wipe out Carolina. But 7 wins, it's going to be the race for 7 wins here this year in the NFC South.
We shall see how that unfolds in the NFC South. The Los Angeles Chargers will not make the playoffs in 2023. Truth or exaggeration?
you know, my heart is telling me, you know, Chargers got a Charger. That's going to be a truth. But they're just supremely talented. And I know Mike Williams is hurt, but you know what? Not every team can plug in a first round draft pick there like Quentin Johnson. So if they can get him up to speed, they can keep Austin Eckler healthy. Justin Herbert remains on the field. This team is just too talented and not to be in that playoff conversation. So I, as much as I ridicule the Chargers, this is a playoff team. So I have to go with the exaggeration there.
They're definitely a playoff team on paper, but they're 2-3 now. And just look at their next four games at the Chiefs this weekend, then home to play the Bears on Sunday Night Football, which should be a win. But then they have to go all the way to East Rutherford on Monday night for a showdown with that amazing New York Jets defense. And then they have to come back home to face the Detroit Lions. If they don't win two out of their next four games, I would say they're not making the playoffs if that comes to pass.
Yeah, they still got two games against the Broncos, you know. Throw the Patriots in there. that end of the season, they should be able to make the push. I don't know, dude.
Oh, we shall see. But you're the one who's lost faith in Brandon Staley, so you're kind of flip-flopping here.
I am kind of flip-flopping because, yeah, you know, Brandon Staley, I am driving that bus to get him out of L.A. at this point. But, you know, again, like I said, that team is just so talented that there's no reason why they couldn't make the playoffs just like they did last year and suffer a humiliating defeat in the first round.
In 2000, a new coach took over in New England, and his name was Bill Belichick. And the Patriots' record that year, 5-11. Six Super Bowl championships, and decades later, we now sit in 2023, and the Patriots are off to easily their worst start in the Bill Belichick era. So, truth or exaggeration, the Patriots will win no more than four games in 2023.
You know, I'm going to go with the truth. I think this team is spiraling. The offense is going down the tubes. It's taking the defense with it. The injuries there are racking that unit. Their schedule doesn't get any easier. They got the Bills this week. They got to go to Miami, their house of horrors, the game before Halloween. So neither of those are easy games. They still have the Chargers, the Steelers, the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Jets again. So this schedule is not easy. I could pick out maybe two more wins on that schedule, but I don't see any more than that. This team is in full crashing for Caleb, collapse for Caleb, whatever you want to call it, dumping them for Drake. They need to start thinking about getting veterans out of there and getting draft picks in return and all in on 2024.
We are less than 2 weeks away from Halloween, which is also the 2023 NFL trading deadline. And a big name that has surfaced in trade buzz is Carolina Panthers star pass rusher Brian Burns. Keep in mind, the Rams offered two first-round picks for him at the deadline last year, and the Panthers said no. So, truth or exaggeration, the Panthers should trade Brian Burns at the deadline, especially if they could get two first-round picks for him.
David, there's nobody other than maybe a few quarterbacks in the league that I wouldn't trade for two first-round picks right now. Carolina is going nowhere. Yes, Burns is a building block, but yes, he is, the money is going to go up, 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 and they have to take into consideration a complete rebuild there, loading up on those draft picks. And whether they use those draft picks to draft players or, you know, look at Miami after they got all those draft picks, trading for Tyreek Hill, drafting Waddle, you know, being able to use those in creative ways, bringing in Bradley Chubb was one of them. So having that ammunition to rebuild that team is vital and important. And, you know, if I thought Carolina had a chance to be a playoff team, I would have said definitely don't trade Burns. We probably talked about this in the preseason, and I would have said don't trade him for two first-round picks. But at 0-5, everything's up for discussion. They definitely should be moving him by that trading deadline if they can get back those draft picks.
And that's 0-6, Sal, and I couldn't agree more. Rookie wide receiver Rashi Rice will be the number two option in the passing game for the Chiefs by Thanksgiving, if not sooner. Truth or exaggeration?
Wait, David, he already is the number two. Who's the number two option in Kansas City?
This Miko Hardman? They traded for Miko Hardman today.
Oh, please. Well, he wasn't the number two option when he was there the last 4 years. You know, I don't know what's going on with those Chiefs receivers there. It's been, you know, just a matter of Travis Kelce, and that's it. I thought Justin Watson would take another big step forward. I didn't see MVS dropping off the map like he did this year. You know, Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney, where are they? These guys just disappear. Like, they just, are they on the field? I don't, you know, you don't see them. They make no impact at all. Pacheco coming out of the backfield is probably their number two or three receiver right now. So yeah, Rashi Rice, I think he's already the number two option. And Hardman or not, is going to stay in that role, and his role is only going to grow the more comfortable he gets in that offense and the more he can build up that rapport with Mahomes.
Regardless of what else happens this season, Robert Saleh has earned another year as head coach of the Jets. Truth or exaggeration?
You know, I think he earned that second year as soon as Aaron Rodgers renegotiated that deal so that he wasn't getting paid $100 million next year and has that two-year agreement here with the Jets and will be back next year. I can't imagine them getting rid of Saleh, even if the Jets tank out and lose every game the rest of the season, only because you got to keep Hackett and all those Packers receivers around, and new coach isn't going to want to have some offensive coordinator thrust on him for 1 year with a 40-year-old quarterback. So yeah, I mean, he's pretty safe. I'm going to go with the truth on that. He's pretty safe, and I don't think it has anything to do with whatever happens the rest of the year, whether the Jets are 3-14 or 9-8, isn't going to make any difference. Saleh will be back.
He most certainly will. And last but not least, for truth or exaggeration for this week, the Lions will end up with a higher playoff seed than the Eagles. Truth or exaggeration?
You know, I was going to say that's an exaggeration, but you know what? I haven't been impressed. You know, the Eagles' injuries are catching up with them, and Detroit, you know, there's a lot of winnable games, just like we were talking about these schedules, you know. Tough game against Baltimore this week, sure, but the Raiders, the bye, the Chargers, the Bears, I mean, Packers,
the Broncos. They should be,
they're favored in all these games, exactly. You still got two games against the Vikings, for goodness sakes. You know what? Yeah, I'm in, David. All in. Yes, number two seed, Detroit, pushing the 49ers all the way to the end of the season for that number one seed. I'm with you on that. Get on the bandwagon. It's Detroit Lions time.
It most certainly is. And speaking of the Eagles, they play in our game of the week this week as they host the Miami Dolphins on Sunday night in what should be a very intriguing matchup. And now let's begin our preview of this game by focusing on this Miami Dolphins defense. As we know, Vic Fangio does not like to blitz often, but given Jalen Hurts' struggles against the blitz, would you anticipate the Dolphins setting extra rushers more than usual on Sunday night?
Is Vic Fangio going to change his spots? Is there anybody more stubborn in the NFL than Vic Fangio? No, he's not going to change anything. He's going to play his same defense. He's not going to start blitzing more. No way, no how. And also, the part two of that, of course, is that Dolphins secondary as well. They need help there. They don't need to be left alone on islands and short in numbers with blitzers or anything like that. I mean, Xavier Howard may not play this week. He's on the injury report. So, yeah. I mean, David, would you leave Eli Apple in single coverage against either of these Eagles receivers ever?
No.
God, no. So, yeah. Yes, the Eagles vulnerable to blitz, but I can't see it happening with this Dolphins defense.
And on the flip side, with the Eagles offense, they have an interesting task ahead of them this week, not in the defense they're facing, because the defense they're facing has been struggling, but the opposing offense is far ahead of any other offense in the league. And the Eagles' best bet to win this game might be to shorten the game and take the Dolphins' offense off the field for long stretches of time. So my question is, does an offensive game plan centered around DeAndre Swift and the run game give the Eagles the best shot against the Dolphins this weekend?
You know, it's a tough one because, again, you look at that Miami secondary and you say, that's where we've got to attack. And you look at that Miami offense and you're like, doesn't matter how good we are on defense. They're putting points on the board and they can put them up in a hurry. No lead is safe. So the conventional wisdom so far has been pass, pass, pass. Miami's hasn't been in a situation really of anybody, running the ball down their throat in any way, shape, or form, other than the Chargers having some success in week one. So I have to agree with you, David. I think that Philadelphia is shortening the game where their offense is a little inconsistent and their defense injuries struggling this year so far, been middle of the pack. They're going to have to do something to shorten the game and keep that Miami offense off the field and keep this a close game where they can, grind out a win. So yeah, for Philadelphia, as hard as it is to do, looking up and seeing Eli Apple out there at cornerback, they're going to have to be disciplined and run that football and shorten that game, keep that Miami offense off the field. That's going to have to be the strategy if they want to pull out a W.
I couldn't agree more. And now let's discuss the game-deciding matchups. And we start up front. Lane Johnson is expected to play in this game, according to Brian Baldinger of NFL Network, who has a lot of contacts in the Eagles organization. And him against Bradley Chubb is a very fascinating matchup, not just in the passing game, the running game. Yes. Bradley Chubb is as good as a pass rusher, Bradley Chubb is. As I've told you, Bradley Chubb is an elite edge setter against the run. And I assume the Eagles are going to want to run the ball a lot to keep the Dolphins offense off the field. And they're going to run behind Big 69 a lot of the time. And Bradley Chubb is going to have to set that edge against DeAndre Swift and against Jalen Hurts on some certain plays.
Yeah, definitely. They're going to be pounding that ball. And like you said, that Miami defense, they haven't been tested so in that running game, really. So seeing where they can move some bodies, get some openings there on that offensive line. And like you said, having Lane Johnson being able to be healthy enough to play is a huge, huge win for Philadelphia as well. Because, you know, the backup, Jack Driscoll, right? Not Jake.
Oh, yeah. He struggled big time last week.
He certainly did. So, that really, you really saw the effect that had on the offense. And we see it with, all 32 teams in the league. Nobody's losing offensive linemen and operating efficiently on offense. So, huge matchup there, without a doubt that. And like we said, especially if the Eagles are going to run the ball, they need that winning that line of scrimmage.
And it's not just Xavier Howard who might not play for the Dolphins this weekend. It's center Connor Williams who might not be able to play due to a groin injury as well. And that takes us to our next matchup. The interior of the Miami Dolphins offensive line against that Eagles defensive line with Jalen Carter, front runner for Defensive Rookie of the Year, and Fletcher Cox in the middle. And with a quarterback like Tua, who's not known as the most athletic quarterback on the planet, interior pressure is the worst. If they cannot keep Jalen Carter and Fletcher Cox at all away from Tua's jersey, that could spell a long night for the Dolphins.
That certainly could. That interior pass rush of Philadelphia just sets up so many headaches for so many other teams. And having guys like Brandon Graham and Hassan Reddick, Josh Sweat there to clean up that quarterback scrambling out of the pocket is such a huge advantage for that Philadelphia defense. And yeah, that middle of the line, and let's not forget Jordan Davis there as well, because I'm also interested to see how, you know, this interior defensive line and these linebackers for the Eagles handle the Miami running game. You know, two of these wide receivers get all the attention, but the Miami Dolphins running game, you know it, with Mike McDaniel is a genius in the running game. Nobody draws that up. And yes, Devin Achane being on injured reserve is a huge loss, but we saw last week, it didn't quite hit the number I had in my bold prediction for touchdowns, but he was a huge impact on that game. I'm talking Raheem Mostert. So yeah, see what happens with the Eagles when on the counter, Miami's trying to run that ball down their throat. And as good as that defensive line is, and as good and strong pass rushers they are, that's going to put a lot of pressure on the big man right in the middle of that defense, whether it's Cox or Carter or Jordan Davis, to fill those holes and put Miami in difficult spots that they normally aren't in these, you know, get them into a third and long situation.
Indeed. And you mentioned those Dolphins corners having to go up against A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith minus Xavien Howard, which is very possible because Xavien Howard did not practice today with a groin injury. But the Eagles are absolutely hurting in the secondary as well. Their safety, Reed Blankenship, might not play this week. And the most important thing any defense can do against this Dolphins offense is to play too deep all day long and not let Tua beat you over the top with Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. And it's going to be very hard for the Eagles to do with such a banged up secondary.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That Eagles secondary has been hurting. You know, even if guys are playing, they're going to be a lot of these guys are going to be at less than 100% if they are out on the field. So, yeah, they've had problems in that secondary. And we've seen this year with Miami, Tyreek Hill, instant offense there. Don't forget about Waddle. And Tua, there's nobody been better this year on getting the ball into those playmakers' hands. So, yeah, this is both sides of the ball, man. We're looking at some great matchups here. This is going to be a fun, fun Sunday night game.
It most certainly is. And now let's make our picks for this game. I will go first here. It's going to be a very close game. It's going to be a very high-scoring game. But at the end of the day, I do not trust this banged up Eagles secondary to be able to stop this Dolphins passing attack. And the Dolphins have been getting a lot of shade thrown at them, saying, oh, they haven't really beaten an elite team, which is true. But I think they use that as bulletin board motivation this week and make a big statement on Sunday night, showing America once and for all that they belong in the Super Bowl conversation this year. I like the Dolphins to win 38-35. Do we hear a simpatico alert, Hal?
Sound that simpatico alert. We're close on that score, too. I'm high scoring as well. I think the Dolphins, it'll be a little more comfortable. I know it's in Philadelphia. I'm surprised the Dolphins still aren't the favorite there. I just don't trust that Eagles defense, and I'm not sold on that Eagles offense here as well. They've been piling up points against struggling defenses. We saw them last week against the Jets, and that offense was extremely limited. I think we could see the, you know, some more struggles this week, and this isn't the team to have struggles against on offense. Miami 37, Philadelphia 30.
And now let's pick the rest of these week 7 games, starting with our locks of the week. What do you have, Hal?
All right. My lock of the week, I'm going the easy way. I'll take the easy way out on this one, David. I'm going to Monday night, San Francisco, Minnesota. San Francisco's only a 7-point favorite. I don't understand that. You can give me 3 touchdowns. I'm taking San Francisco 38-17 over Minnesota as my lock of the week.
I like the 49ers as well, but since I already took the 49ers as a lock this season, I'm going with their NFC West counterparts, the Seahawks, over the Cardinals as my lock of the week. Do you like the Seahawks in that game, Hal?
I do. Seahawks are a big favorite in that game, 7.5 points. I'm taking Arizona to cover the spread, but outright, I still have Seattle winning this game in a close one because, you know, I'm all in on Arizona. I'm loving this team. So my heart's telling me the Cardinals will hang close. Seattle 21, Arizona 20.
And now on to our upset specials. And this only counts as an upset special because there weren't any other viable candidates. The Ravens are favored at home against the Lions by 3 points. And when I saw that, I was like, oh boy, this is going to motivate the Lions big time because they're going to look at that spread and see it as a sign of disrespect. Like the way they've been playing so far, they beat the Chiefs in week one, for crying out loud. I don't care how much the Chiefs passing game is struggling so far this season. A win is a win, and they beat the defending champs on their home turf, and people don't think they could beat a similarly flawed Ravens team. Give me a break. I like the Lions over the Ravens. Who do you like in that game, Hal?
Sound that simpatico? I felt the same exact way. I looked at that point spread and I said, that's got to be a mistake. It's going the wrong way here. So yeah, I've got Detroit. Look, we know Baltimore. Lamar's going to play well. They're going to keep it close, sure. You know, great defense there, no doubt about it. But come on, Lions offense is clicking. Defense much improved. I've got the Lions pulling away. 27-17 over Baltimore.
What about your upset special, Hal? Is that it?
Well, no, there weren't any other viable options. So as usual, I went out into left field and decided to take the most outrageous upset special I could find out there. Chargers 23, Chiefs 20. How? I don't know. But that's what I'm picking there. So.
I had an idea you would pick the Chargers this week, given what you said about them in Truth or Exaggeration. That said, as much as I want to pick the Chargers in this game, I just don't trust Brandon Staley. I think the Chiefs somehow, some way find a way, and they win 27-24 over the Chargers. And now let's pick tonight's game between the Jaguars and the Saints in New Orleans. Trevor Lawrence is listed as questionable with a mildly sprained knee, but I would be shocked if he doesn't play. And if he plays as expected, give me the Jaguars in this game. This Saints offense absolutely cannot convert in the red zone to save their life. And they're down three offensive tackles in this game. Not even close. Give me the Jaguars 21-10 over the Saints.
Yeah, I have it as a close one. And, you know, New Orleans at home, always going to be a fun game. But I just see the Jaguars. They shook off that early season malaise. They're back to what we expected them to be. I think they should win this game. I'll give it a close one for New Orleans. They're playing well. But Jacksonville 24, New Orleans 20.
The Cleveland Browns and their historically special defense take their act on the road to Indy this week against the Colts and Gardner Minshew. And Minshew mania is long dead. And even if Deshaun Watson doesn't play this game, I still like the Browns and their defense to carry the day. What about you, Hal?
I agree, David. No doubt about it. I'm going to give Cleveland winning this game, and I'll even throw in a scorigami on this one. So score that we haven't seen before. Cleveland 18, Indianapolis 8.
Ooh, that's another great bold prediction, Hal. And a battle in the NFC South as the Falcons travel to Tampa to take on the Bucs. Both these teams are flawed, but don't get me wrong. Tampa, even without Tom Brady, they're still the most talented roster in this division as we speak right now. And I think their run defense is going to take that ground attack away from the Falcons. They're going to neutralize Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier and force Desmond Ridder to take to the air. And he'll make a couple of mistakes, which turned out to be the difference in a close game. Give me the Bucs, 21-17.
David, I got one reason for picking the Bucs here. Yeah. If Atlanta wins and New Orleans loses, like I expect, you're going to tell me Atlanta's a first-place team 7 weeks into this season? No way. No how. Oh, my God. No, I got to pick against them. I just can't see that happening. My brain is exploding thinking about it. Tampa 27, Atlanta 23.
the Raiders, and they will likely be starting Aiden O'Connell or Brian Hoyer at quarterback this weekend against the Bears in Chicago, who will be starting Tyson Bagent. This game is going to be ugly, given the fact that it's going to be backup quarterback against backup quarterback. But at the end of the day, the Bears are the worst team, and I have the Raiders pulling out a win. But what makes it so unusual? Stay tuned for bowl predictions. Who do you like here, Hal?
I like the Raiders as well. I expect, yeah, like you said, ugly. I'll put it at low scoring. Yeah, Raiders, they'll cover the spread barely, 19-15 over the Bears.
Your struggling New England Patriots, dare I say your reeling New England Patriots, host the Buffalo Bills, coming off a hard-fought win over the New York Giants at home on Sunday night. I think the real Bills show up this week. They're not going to get caught off guard by a struggling team for the second week in a row. Plus, Brian Daboll had the goods on Josh Allen that Bill Belichick does not. It's not going to be even close. Give me the Bills, 31-10 over the Patriots.
David, you're a little conservative with that. I've got Buffalo blowing this one open. I'll tell you why in my bold prediction, but the score, Buffalo 56, New England 10.
Oh, that's an even more lopsided score than the final score of Super Bowl 20 when the Patriots lost to the 85 Bears of 46-10. And the Washington Commanders, who find themselves at 3-3 despite being an enormously flawed team, traveled to East Rutherford to take on the New York Giants, who should have pulled off an upset last Sunday in Buffalo. The Commanders might not be good at the end of the day, but the Giants are even worse. Give me the Commanders in this game. Let's say 24-10.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I beat the drum for Brian Daboll. There's no bigger fan, but I cannot go with my heart in this situation. Commanders, even on the road, should be winning this game. I'll give the Giants a little break and say this one goes to overtime. Heck, let's play all 15 minutes of overtime in this one. But Washington will take it on that field goal in overtime, 20-17 over the G-men.
The Steelers travel to L.A. to take on the Rams at SoFi Stadium. And I came across this statistic. In the Mike Tomlin era, the Steelers are 3-7 in games played on the West Coast. But that said, I don't think that foreshadows what's going to happen this Sunday. I hate betting against Mike Tomlin coach teams, and I think the Rams, not having Kyron Williams or Ronnie Rivers for that matter this game, is going to force them to rely on the pass, and I just do not trust the offensive line at pass protection against T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith and that Steelers pass rush. I like the Steelers to grind out another win. Let's call it 17-13 over the Rams.
David, you sold me on it. This one I've been up in the air on, going back and forth. The Kyron Williams injury, definitely a huge factor on this. The Mike Tomlin factor, definitely a huge factor on this. Add in, you know, Pittsburgh's coming off a bye week as well. This defense hasn't played as well as we expected this defense would. I think this is the week they turn things around here. I'm going to say Pittsburgh wins this one pretty handily, despite being the underdogs on the road. I've got them at 20-10 over the Rams.
And last but not least, the Green Bay Packers, who have absolutely been struggling since their dominant victory over the Bears in week one, traveled to Denver to face the reeling Broncos, and the Broncos defense might have looked much improved last week against that Chiefs offense, but the Packers are more committed to the run than Andy Reid is, and the Packers are going to have Aaron Jones back, and that alone makes the difference against the historically inept Denver Broncos run defense. I like the Packers. Do I hear a simpatico alert?
Beep, 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 beep. Road favorites, no problem. I'm going with the Packers to cover that spread. I thought about this game. Maybe I could convince myself for an upset special for Denver. And the more I thought about it, the more I went, no, I just can't do it. You know, they were all up for Kansas City. I think this is going to be their letdown week as well. I mean, that's a big emotional punch in the gut to play so well on defense against the Chiefs and still lose that game. So I'm not impressed by the Packers. but I think they're going to have more than enough to handle the Broncos. Make it ugly. Let's say 17-11 over Denver.
And now on to our bold predictions for week 7. You go first here, Hal.
All right, my bold prediction. Hey, Sean McDermott, rookie season as head coach of the Bills, going up against New England. Patriots with a 20-point lead. Nathan Peterman in the game at quarterback. And Bill Belichick ran up the score in that game, passing the ball in the fourth quarter. That was the Rob Gronkowski flying elbow on Tre'Davious White in that game. And then also on Christmas Eve that game, another game, they ran up the score on that. So Sean McDermott, he's keeping receipts. He's had his playoff blowout win over the Patriots. He still isn't satisfied here. He is going to tell Josh Allen, keep throwing that ball in the fourth quarter. I don't care if you throw 50 passes here. This is the payback game. Give Allen 6 touchdown passes, 4 of them to Diggs. Allen can run in the other 2 touchdowns for himself. Buffalo, 8 touchdowns, 50 burger on the Belichick defense. 56-10. That's my bold prediction.
Ooh, I like it. My bold prediction is this. The Raiders-Bears game is actually a little bit more high scoring. The Raiders are going to win 24-21, but how do they score that much? Both teams combined for 15 field goals. Oh. No touchdowns whatsoever. That is my bold prediction for week number 7.
Now that's bold. I like that. Wow.
We shall see. And now, as always, we conclude with our challenge flags. And I will go first. And my challenge flag goes to the Kansas City Chiefs. Andy Reid, I know you're not the biggest fan of Smash Mouth football, but your best players on offense, outside of Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, are your interior offensive line and Isaiah Pacheco. And you are winning games due, in most part, at least to start this season, to your amazing, amazing, amazing rock star defense, dare I say. And what is the best way to compliment an all-star defense like the one the Chiefs have? Running the ball. Andy Reid, please don't be afraid to run the ball more to compliment your amazing defense, because that will allow you guys to win even more games until the passing game gets clicking. That is my challenge flag for the week. What about yours, Hal?
Now, David, I think I need to throw this challenge flag on myself. I picked the Chargers. It's my upset special. I'm the bus driver to get Brendan Staley to the airport out of L.A. here. What am I doing? What is wrong with me here? Brendan Staley, I'm challenging you this week. Find that running game on offense. Figure out that pass defense. Get Gerald Everett involved on that offense. 5 catches for 25 yards the last 2 weeks. Come on, I challenge you, Brendan Staley. Win this, upset this game like I'm calling for Kansas City. Don't make me look like a fool.
He is Hal Bett, ladies and gentlemen. Catch his work in full press coverage and follow him on X at HalBett01. Thank you, Hal, and that's it for today here on Sports Crunch. But we'll be back next week to recap Week 7, preview Week 8, and discuss all the latest news and notes from around the National Football League. So stay tuned. Also, be sure to follow me on X at DCrom59 and on Instagram, TikTok, and now Threads at Sports Crunch with DCrom. And remember, that's Crunch with a K. For Hal Bett, this is David Cromwell saying so long, and whatever you do, please choose love. Please choose kindness. Please choose compassion. Please choose selflessness. And please choose empathy, which are the core characteristics of the best teammates and teams in any sport. Until next time, cats, kittens, stay cool.